Meeting will come to order. Clerk will note the rule. There is a quorum. We have the minutes from a long time ago, April 4th, before us. Representative Carlson moves approval of the minutes.
Yeah, and then we went on break April 7th, so shortly thereafter.
Yeah.
I moved the minutes.
All right. Thank you, sir. Any changes, additions, corrections to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Okay, members, we've got three items today, and I'm going to change the order just a little bit so that the House File 859 is the second bill. But we will start out with House File 745. The chair will move that House File 745 be referred to the General Register, and Representative Wills, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Could you present your bill?
I shall. Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 745 is a bill that would rename a bridge in Rosemount Coates area. It's within the city of Coates. Highway 46 would be renamed as Corporal Benjamin S. Kopp Bridge. And let me tell you a little bit about why I'm doing this. Corporal Benjamin S. Kopp was an Army Ranger serving over in Afghanistan. He grew up in Rosemount, and he was on his third tour of duty when he and his team came under enemy fire, and I believe it was 10 of his fellow soldiers passed away in that fight, and he was able to rescue a few of his fellow soldiers, but he was shot in the leg in the process and taken to Walter Reed Medical Facility, I think that's in Germany, and they had him under constant care, but unfortunately he passed away from his injuries 8 days later on July 18th, 2009. And he is truly a hero in many ways, always looking out for others, and he was also an organ donor, and he wanted to donate his organs if he were to pass away. And shortly after he did pass away, there was a family friend who was in need of a heart. She had a congenital heart disorder, and Ben's heart lives on in her, and she is alive and well today. So pretty neat how he continues to give even after he's passed away, and he's been served our country. And his mother approached me to rename a bridge in his honor, and this was the bridge that she picked. We negotiated back and forth, and where would you like to do this, and this is the one that she picked that she felt would honor him the most. So I'm humbled to have this opportunity to do this, and I ask for your support.
Can I ask you, Representative Wells, do you have any idea why she felt this particular bridge was the appropriate one?
From my understanding, he and his friends would hang out in that area and just, you know, have fun together, and that was where he grew up, so he was well-known in the community, and because of that, the local organizations like Beyond the Yellow Ribbon and American Legion are familiar with him and are working on raising the funds to cover the cost of the bridge, so there will be no state funds going to this.
Okay, thank you. Did I see a question, Representative Liebling?
Oh,
I'm
no.
Sorry. Okay. Any other questions or discussion on House File 745? Well, seeing none, then the chair will renew his motion that House File 745 be referred to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 745 is referred to the General Register.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have House File 859. Representative Torkelson moves that House File 859 be referred to the General Register. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. That's my motion. I have an able-bodied representative from the Department of Transportation who will describe the bill.
Mr. Radin, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Eric Radin with MnDOT Government Affairs. This is an agency bill, and I'll briefly walk through the provisions of the bill. Sections 1 and 6 remove Trunk Highway 112 from the state highway system and transfer jurisdiction to Le Sueur County. The roadway is about 15 miles long, And since all alternate highways are listed in statute, the legislature must take action to repeal the route description before it can be turned over to a local government. Section 2 authorizes the sale of trunk highway property to adjacent property owners if the original landowner does not wish to repurchase the property once it's been determined that it's no longer needed for a highway purpose. Sections 3 and 4 of the bill help with conveyance of property once it has been offered for sale and has not received any bids. If under current law, if the property does not sell by bid, MnDOT has to reinitiate the bid process if someone is in the future interested in purchasing it. But this would allow MnDOT to list the property on our website on an online inventory, and then anyone could purchase the property after paying the minimum bid price. Section 5 allows MnDOT to convey the McKinstry Mounds property to the Minnesota Historical Society. This is approximately 8 acres. It contains an Indian burial mound, and it's along Trunk Highway 11 up near the Canadian border. Section 6 of the bill, again, is the turnback of Highway 112 to Le Sueur County. And Section 7 turns jurisdiction of Highway 225 over to Becker County. This highway is approximately 9 miles long. And I should mention, in both the cases of the turnbacks, the counties are supportive of and have passed resolutions supporting the turnback projects. And then Section 8 of the bill is a repeal of Legislative Route 101 from the statutes. This is a portion of Interstate 35 in southern Dakota and northern Rice County. And there was a turnback in the 1980s, in the 1990s, but for some reason the statute was not updated at that time. And so this is just a technical correction to catch up with something that was done in the 1990s.
Thank you. Discussion through House File 859. Representative Carlson.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding that this particular bill, and I'm not sure if it's a question of the department or the author, was in an earlier transportation bill that we already passed. Is that correct?
I see a
nodding head yes. So my question then of either of you that cares to answer it is this a vehicle, or why are we passing this bill separately from the general transportation bill?
Representative Parkinson, you want to take that?
Oh, sure, Mr. Chair. I think it is safe to say that this bill probably does have wheels, headlights, and a steering wheel.
That's what, Mr. Chairman, I surmise.
Representative Carlson.
Does that tell us, Mr. Chairman, something about the future of the bill that we passed earlier?
Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Carlson. I was not a Boy Scout. I was a 4-H'er, but I do believe what the Boy Scouts say, and that is be prepared.
Mr. Chairman, I am a former Boy Scout. I understand. And I did have vehicles.
All right. Thank you, Representative Carlson. Well, there's
not as a Boy Scout, Mr. Chairman. I didn't have a vehicle then, but I'm talking about it.
Well, there's lots of vehicles in the transportation area.
As a legislator, I had vehicles from time to time.
Yeah. Other discussion or questions on the bill? Representative Draskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Wondering if Mr. Rudin could tell us how big is the parcel of land being conveyed to Historical Society, and also will he be paying property taxes on that property?
Mr. Rudin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Draskowski, this site is approximately 8 acres in size, I don't believe there would be any property taxes paid, whether MnDOT controlled the property or the Historical Society. It contains the site of an Indian burial mound. So it seemed more appropriate that the Historical Society be the custodian of that property.
Other discussion or questions? Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Rudin, I just want to verify that there isn't any costs when you say maintaining that Historical Society, I assume, weighed in on the fiscal note, or did just the Department of Transportation?
Mr. Rudin.
Mr. Chair, I thank you for that correction. There should not be any cost to the Historical Society. They're not actually planning to manage the property, but they would just be the custodian of the property. It's my understanding that they have another site in the area, and so the you know, they would monitor activities at the site, but there would not be any active management of the site, and they are supportive of taking over this property.
Other discussion? Seeing no further discussion, Representative Torkelson renews his motion that House Bill 859 be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Here.
Motion prevails. House Bill 859 is referred to the General Register. All right, our final bill of the day is House File 812. And the chair will move that House File 812 be referred to the General Register. And Representative Keel, welcome to the committee. I know that we've got an amendment and an amendment to the amendment. I think those are both yours, correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, and I see that the chair will move the A17-0317 amendment, which I note is a delete all amendment. And then there is an amendment to that amendment which basically just fills in a blank with a fee amount of $345. And I think it'd be appropriate to have the chair move that A4 amendment so that we can get that into the 0317 amendment. Is there any discussion to the A4 amendment to the amendment? Representative Murphy.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe either you or Representative Keel can just describe for us how that works then, what this fee is for.
All right.
It was a blank appropriation in the bill, so it would be helpful to know how that would work and what it covers, et cetera.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I guess I figured we would talk about that in the context of the entire 0317 amendment, but we can certainly talk about that now. Representative Keel, do you want to talk a little bit about what this fee is in the A4 amendment to the amendment?
The thank you, members, Mr. Chair, and members. The fee would be for the initial licensure and then a license fee for every 2 years that the facility would pay as their license fee.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Murphy.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and Representative Keel. And how did you come up with $345?
It is similar. Excuse me, Mr. Chair. It is similar to some other facilities that are paying that amount for license.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Keel, thank you for that. And is it then a self-sustaining fee, like most of our licensure fees are? And do you know if that is sustaining the licensure work that is being done for the facilities by the Department of Health?
Representative Keel.
That is a little bit of a challenge. Yes, that is the intent, is that it is self-sustaining. However, we were hoping that maybe that we would have that number from the department, but I think it could change a little, although I don't see any reason why it would change, because the intent is for it to be self-sustaining. So.
And so, Mr. Chair and Representative Keel, it's still a work in progress, as they say, a soft number.
Yes, I believe there is a possibility of actually, hopefully, with the discussion of this bill, the cost will actually go down.
Hey, Representative Murphy, how about if we just do the amendment to the amendment so we get into this amendment, and then we can talk about those issues in greater detail, because I think that they fit maybe more with the total amendment rather than just this one number fee. All right. All in favor of the A4 amendment to the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The A4 amendment to the amendment is adopted. Okay, now we have the delete all amendment as amended, the A17-0317 amendment before us. And Representative Keel, why don't you present this amendment and describe what it does?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It has always been my intent to provide assurance to women that they can count on the care and safety as they seek help for their health and wellness. We want abortion facilities just to follow the clinical policy guidelines for the abortion industry standards that are set either by the National Abortion Federation or Planned Parenthood accreditation guidelines. Why this is so important is that Dr. Gosnell still performed abortions even though he had not followed the guidelines. This is not something that his patients were aware of. While you may tell me that the procedure is safe, many patients are not aware of the care that they need to take when they are going through an abortion. While we have no concern for the abortion facilities that are now performing abortions in Minnesota, we want to make sure that we keep all facilities following these guidelines. So with that, the changes in this bill are not a lot, but there should be some some basic changes, which is really just requesting that anyone who provides an abortion 10 or more a month are following the industry standards, the abortion industry standards, and that it's important because this is a situation where a lot of people do not, patients do not have a doctor-patient relationship, and we want to make sure that they're informed on their needs, what they need to be following, and by following the organization standards in the bill, hopefully that would produce that concern or help with that concern. There is just a license that is required, as we just talked about, that would be hopefully $345, which was the intent, for them to pay once every 2 years. And the application would be from the actual abortion facility that is in the state. I think that's I don't know if members have questions. I'm sure they do.
All right. Okay. Questions on the A17-0317 amendment as amended. Representative Houseman, then Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have a letter in our packet from the Commissioner, the Department of Health. Does this speak to the underlying bill or the delete all? Do you know?
That I am not sure of.
And the reason I ask is on the second page, the legislation as proposed would violate the court's ruling, which he references. And so I'm wondering if the point of your delete all was to change anything so that it wouldn't violate the court's ruling.
Okay, Representative Houseman, I'm informed by staff that we received this letter before we received the delete all and posted it.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I would gather that it refers to the original bill. Representative Liebling, then Hilsner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first of all, I would like to point out that the delete all amendment is significantly different than the underlying bill. And that causes me some concern because obviously this is a very an issue over which members have intense feelings on both sides. It is something that obviously is very important since it affects the health of women, it affects their family relationships, it has very far-reaching effects, and yet we're just hearing this for the first time in the Ways and Means Committee, and it is essentially a new bill. So, Mr. Chair, I just first want to really register my concern about the fact that the bill really hasn't gone to committees that it really does need to go to if this is a serious kind of proposal, and I don't doubt that Representative Keel is serious. So that would be my first comment. I also do have some questions for Representative Keel, and I was interested to hear the presentation of the bill, and that, Representative Keel, that your concern seems to be that women who are there for abortions may not know what they need to be doing. You mentioned the doctor-patient relationship that may not exist, and you seem to be focusing on the idea that women may not have proper instructions for what to do after an abortion. And I'm just wondering if that is, first of all, did I get that right, that is the concern that you're addressing here?
Representative Keel.
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, I do not believe that now that there's no reason to believe that they are not getting the clear instruction. However, there are places that have performed abortions, not followed the standards, the industry standards, and want to make sure that we always are doing, are giving those instructions to women. And that would be not just abortion standards, but to make sure that we are following the industry standards.
Representative Levin.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And so, Representative Kill, it seems to me then that you're focusing on, when you talk about standards, you're focusing on what women are told, I assume, you know, in terms of their care, what they need and what they need to do to take care of themselves after an abortion. It seems that that's the focus of your discussion here with this Delete All Amendment. And so my question to you would be, how, where in the bill is that particular concern addressed? So, in other words, when I read this bill, I don't see anything. Now, there's a lot of vague language in here that refers to things outside the bill. But where do you address in here any concern about a woman, say, perhaps not being given proper instructions about how to take care of herself, or something that is, you know, that would have to do with a lapse in the doctor-patient relationship, as you put it? Where, how does the bill address that?
Representative Yolk.
Mr. Chair and Representative Levin, I'm sorry if I led you to believe it was just that. No, I referenced that when I was referring to Dr. Gosnell and what happened out in Pennsylvania. There is no intent to specifically point out a procedure. The intent is to make sure that abortion facilities provide or follow the abortion standards that is put out by the National Abortion Federation or Planned Parenthood Accreditation.
Representative
Mr. Chair, well, thank you. And Representative Keogh, I think you've explained this a couple of different ways. And, I mean, it's important to be really clear about this because, again, even though you've significantly changed the bill, and I appreciate some of the ways in which it's been changed, but I believe that this is a bill that is still singling out abortion for a particular focus from among other procedures that are actually more dangerous. And abortion, as we know, has a very, very low rate of any kind of complication. And this bill is, again, singling out abortion for extra scrutiny. And even though I know you said in your opening comments that, or maybe just now, that you're thinking of a couple of organizations that who would do the accreditation, the bill doesn't say who would do it, and the bill doesn't say what standards would be used. And, you know, in some other areas as well, I have concern when we simply say, well, we're in Minnesota, we can set our standards for things, but we're just going to refer to some outside organization, some national accrediting organization, and what they say is the standard is going to be our standard. And you don't even say in the bill who that is or any reference to what those standards are. So, you know, as far as I can tell from the bill, you know, it could be stay in bed for a week. I don't know what kind of standard you're talking about here. And you described it as women not understanding what they need to do to take care of themselves. I think this is very unclear in the bill. But maybe I'll just kind of finish my statement here about this because this is a completely new bill. It hasn't been heard anywhere. I don't want to use the Ways and Means Committee to go line by line and point by point, but just to say that I think this is still a bill that violates the Constitution because it's still, even though it's a little different now than the whole women's health decision that the Supreme Court made rather recently, it's a little different now, but it still puts a burden on the woman. We don't even know what it's going to require here and what impact it might have on abortion facilities. We just don't even know because there's so many vague things about this bill. But we do know that women still have the right to have an abortion if they choose, certainly during the first trimester. And we do know that the state needs to demonstrate a compelling interest in order to put a burden on that right. And I'm not seeing here that there's any different compelling interest than there was before in the last bill, which certainly, or I should say the underlying bill, which certainly would have been ruled unconstitutional. And I don't see that any credible evidence has been presented that these standards that you're putting forward here and these requirements that you're putting on facilities that do abortion are necessary or supported by evidence. In fact, we hardly even know what they are because of the way the bill is written. So I certainly think that this is a very troubling bill. I think the procedure is very troubling. And Mr. Chair, I don't know if you would be able to answer this or Representative Kidd, but what is the intention for this bill? Is it the intention that it's going to go from this committee to the floor and be heard in this session, or is this something for next year?
Well, the motion is to refer the bill to the General Register. I guess as to whether it is being taken up this year or not, I guess I don't know that I know the answer to that. That would be a Rules Committee question, unless Representative Teal.
Mr. Chair and Representative Levin, my understanding is that, yes, in fact, it is going to the General Register and hopefully to the floor shortly.
Okay, and this one final comment, and I'll let other people have some, I'm sure other people have other things to say as well, but one thing this bill does have in common with the underlying bill is that it still only applies to facilities that do abortions 10 or more each month. And Representative Keel, why 10 or more? I mean, what is that just as arbitrary as it was in the underlying bill, or is there some actual rationale for why 10?
Representative Peel.
Mr. Chair and Representative Levin, most abortions are performed in abortion facilities in Minnesota, and that's the general number. We've had this conversation many times. So, yes.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Leland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Keel, we've had it many times, but I don't think you have an answer for it yet, and that's still the same problem as before. I mean, if this is really about women's health, a woman who goes to a place that does only nine a month is surely entitled to the same health and safety standards as a woman who goes to a place that does more. So, you know, I guess that's not a question, but, you know, the answer hasn't gotten any better with time. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Keel, I noticed that this bill didn't go to either the Civil Law Committee or to the Public Safety Committee, and it actually specifically has tasks for the judiciary and specifically has new data that it changes kind of the classification or who will be able to get access to it. Why did this bill not go to either of those committees, and don't you believe that it will be afoul of the rule?
Representative Peel.
I would ask Representative Hillstrom, can you point out to me where it needs to go, the judicial system?
Well, so
the public safety, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Even looking specifically at the fiscal note actually specifically has something for the Supreme Court. And if you look at the last page of the fiscal note, it specifically talks about that it is presumed that this bill may result in injunctive relief or other sanctions being pursued against certain health facilities that perform abortions, and that is through the courts, of course. They don't believe that it will have a significant impact on the courts, but it specifically lists new things that may happen. So the judiciary is specifically mentioned in your bill, having additional things that may happen. So that's the first piece about why it didn't have to go to public safety. And then the second is, in the application process, you are changing which pieces of data people would be able to get access to and what kinds of data can be collected and who decides what kind of data will be collected. And so my question is, why did it not then have to go to civil law as well?
You know, I guess if I can jump in, Representative Hillstrom, I can maybe answer the first part of your question. Is the fiscal note does apply to the underlying bill, but not the amendments. So I don't know. There may be things in the fiscal note that were related to the underlying bill, but perhaps they're not related to the amendment. But Representative Keel may be better able to answer that question than me, Representative Keel, or the other part of the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hellstrom. The intent for the data is internally what they already do. There's no change there. I believe we had conversation earlier about the concern of privacy in inspections, and certainly the Department of Health inspects all kinds of things that are required to that have data that is private that they already are required to follow HIPAA law by, and there's no intention for any change in the data that would be, it's not public data, other than the Department of Health would have access to that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hellstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am looking at the amendment, the A17-0317 amendment, and specifically on line 2.5, it talks about may seek an injunction in district court against the continued operation of the facility. So there's the first place that I've seen that language in the bill. So it's pretty clear, Mr. Chair, that whether you're for or against this proposal, that it should have gone both to civil law and to public safety.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Keogh, on line 3.22, you have a severability. Which section in here do you think is possibly will be challenged on a constitutional basis?
Representative Keogh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lewis. I hate to venture a guess as to what would be possibly challenged, but severability clauses in these types of bills are put in here because abortion is often challenged in court.
Representative Guinness.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think she's absolutely correct. It's often challenged, and yet I don't see any appropriation in here for either the Attorney General or the Department of Health to stand for the state in a court case. So it seems to me that this bill needs an appropriation very specifically, probably to the Attorney General's office, in order to defend the state. This committee's responsibility. And so, and rather than being Representative Keogh's issue, I think it is your issue. And as a matter of course, if someone feels that they need to put a severability clause into a bill, then we should make sure that there is an appropriation so that the state can defend itself.
Well, I guess I can speak to that, Representative Wagenius. And, we've had this issue come up in this committee before, and basically the way this issue of constitutionality of bills has been handled for many, many years is the assumption is that if the legislature passes something that the members, at least in their totality, the majority, have felt that it was constitutional. If it's not, we have an appropriation, a rather large appropriation, that goes to the Attorney General and the Attorney General's offices to defend the state. And so we don't carry a separate appropriation in every bill to deal with the possibility that perhaps that bill's constitutionality might be challenged. Sometimes you can look at an abortion bill like this and say, yeah, there's maybe a fair chance that it might be challenged if it became law. But sometimes there are bills that we would never guess would be challenged that are challenged nevertheless. And so the budget for those sort of legal expenses are carried in the Attorney General's office and that budget, as opposed to trying to attach something to each and every bill. Representative Wagenius.
Well, I wasn't suggesting that something be attached to each and every bill. And when we have discussed this issue before, it's because one of us is saying perhaps this doesn't meet constitutional muster. But in this case, it is the author who has put in a severability clause. And it seems to me that in that case, when the author puts in a severability clause, assuming, as the author did, that there would be a constitutional challenge, in that case, we should, as a matter of policy, be putting in an appropriation specifically to meet this. This could go to the Supreme Court. And so it's not a matter of routine for the Attorney General to take things to the Supreme Court. So I think this bill needs some more tender, loving care by the chair of this committee.
Well, again, Representative Guinness, I think the convention that we've had under both parties for many, many years is that rather than trying to put an appropriation into a bill we think might be constitutionally challenged, is that instead we appropriate money to the Attorney General, and the Attorney General then uses that money to defend the state against those challenges that may come up. And I guess I see this bill as no different from any other bill that might get challenged. Representative Wagenius.
I think the point is that this is different because the author herself put in a severability clause. So that sets it aside or apart from the other bills that we have. I'm not saying for every bill or ones where I might feel it's unconstitutional and you don't. I am saying when the author puts in a severability clause, that makes it very different.
Well, like I said, it's interesting to think about it from that standpoint, Representative Wagenius, but I guess I disagree from the standpoint that this is the way we've done things for many years with both parties, is to rely on the Attorney General to defend the state on constitutional challenges that come about to legislation that we pass. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Keel. I just have a couple of areas of question for you. I read through the delete all, and I have concerns overall about the scheme that is in the proposal. But in this committee, just a couple of questions. So we talk in here, you talk about accreditation, and I think it is on page 1.10. Line 1.22, you talk about a facility must be accredited, or a member of an accrediting membership, accrediting or membership organization must obtain accreditation. Who does this kind of work?
Representative Keel.
Well, as of now, there are facilities that do that. This is one of the ways. This is the accreditation, the guidelines for from the National Abortion Federation. I understand that the National Planned Parenthood Committee also does accreditations for their facilities. So basically what we're asking is that the state confirm that they are following the guidelines and that they are accredited. And the intent is to the follow through, and then should there be other facilities, abortion industry additions to Minnesota, that they would also be required to follow those guidelines.
And Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And Representative Keel, so have you been through either the Planned Parenthood or National Abortion Federation accreditation process? Do you, not you yourself, but have you read through those materials? Do you understand? Yeah, there it is. I see it. I have not. So I'm asking if you can explain for me, of the committee, what you would be asking these facilities in Minnesota to do in order to do that kind of accreditation. What does it cost? What does it mean for them? Is it something that those national organizations do for single state facilities?
Representative Thiel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I did not read through the Planned Parenthood guidelines or their accreditation process. However, I did read through this one, and it is basic information about how to deal with different issues should they arise in a procedure, an abortion procedure, and making sure that things are followed if there's complications, how to direct the patient, and then the procedures that they need to follow in doing that. Things like when they use a medical induced abortion pill, that they make sure that they instruct the woman to not only take the one that they visibly see her take, but that she also takes the one that comes after that. And the guidelines, the encouragement if there is an indication of a fever or those are the types of things that are in there that they make sure that they come back, that they are reporting, seeking help should there be an infection that could be, you know, actually life-threatening. So.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Keel, you know, we've talked about this in Health and Human Services. Some of the things you're describing there are about best practices of medical practice or nursing practice. Mm-hmm. Those are governed by our individual licenses and not by a facility license. You're asking a facility to get accredited by a national body. I see your packet. I have not read it. I'm not sure that those bodies actually are prepared to do accreditation. And I think that their accreditation would not be about individual medical practice or individual nursing practice. Those are governed by state licenses. We want those governed by state licenses, so Minnesotans have recourse right here in Minnesota. So the part of the bill is really vague. It doesn't describe who. It doesn't say what. It could be, you know, Joe Blow in Washington, D.C. sets up a shingle and says, I will offer accreditation to your clinic. That's not going to provide any measure of safety or standard. And so I think that's an area of the bill that, you know, needs more attention. And I'm going to, between now and we get to the floor, try and understand better what those national organizations do, in fact, about accreditation and see if this is actually something real or if this is something to serve as a barrier so that the clinics can't continue to do the work that they're doing. That's one area of concern. My second area of concern has to do in the bill on page 3, and it has to do with the suspension, revocation, and refusal to renew. So this is the action part of the bill, giving the Commissioner of Health the authority to do a suspension, a revocation, or a refusal to renew a clinic that has sought and achieved a license. And as I was looking through this section and referring back to the law, one of the conditions under which a commissioner could deny, revoke, or refuse a license is subdivision 6, section 3, conduct or practices detrimental to the welfare of a patient. As we have had this debate in committee over time, there are many members of the legislature who have said on the record that they believe an abortion itself is detrimental to the welfare of a patient. And I'm wondering what you think about applying that standard, including that standard in this piece of legislation. And it is a way for a commissioner down the line to actually to refuse or revoke a license for a clinic because in their political judgment, they would view an abortion as detrimental to the welfare of a patient. Can you let me know if you think you're giving a future commissioner of health a blank check to shut down clinics based on their political judgment?
Representative Keel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, first of all, when we talk about the accreditation, this is what the industry already follows. I'm not saying that they should come to the state and pass a licensure. What I am saying is that the state of Minnesota, our commissioner, would follow guidelines that would accredit a facility, confirm that they are following their license. My belief in the suspension, revocation, or refusal to renew a license for a facility would be if they had found that they had not followed the guidelines and therefore created some hazards for women, like as in the situation in Pennsylvania with Dr. Gosnell. He was not accredited, and nor did they support him at all. So what I'm saying is that we want to make sure, and I've said this before in previous, that we want to make sure that when someone goes to a facility, an abortion facility, that they are seeking whatever health care it is, that, but especially abortions, that they are able to be assured that the guidelines are followed and that the care is taken so that their life is not at risk or that they have other problems. And certainly life is not perfect and things can happen, but I would not see a commissioner of whatever political leanings not follow the guidelines or the law that they have in front of them. So, in other words, if abortions are legal in Minnesota, they would certainly have to follow those guidelines and the law that is set before them.
And, Mr. Reverend Chair, I think the language is awfully loose. I don't agree with your evaluation that you're not inadvertently creating a loophole for that kind of political evaluation. It seems to me in a former administration there was a commissioner of health that did allow junk science about a relationship. There was a proven false piece of research that was published, I think, in Lancet in the United Kingdom that suggested there was a link between abortion and breast cancer. That was allowed, I think, publication at our Department of Health for a time. It was proven false. It was intended to scare women. This is a highly political issue. We know that. It is, you know, a highly political issue right here. And as I read this, I do think that you are creating, whether you mean to or not, a loophole that could allow that kind of political attack on clinics that are providing a service, a treatment, intervention for women that is legal, and it's safe because it's legal. And so I think that you could, by this action, be creating a less safe situation for women in their health care. And I'm really concerned about that. So keep working.
Okay, I've got Representative Dean and Fabian. Before I go to Representative Dean, since this is a delete-all amendment, I would like to move that we take the delete-all amendment, the A17-30317 amendment as amended, and then vote on that, substituting it for the language of House File 812, so we got the complete language before us. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment as amended is adopted. Okay, so we have House File 812 now as amended before us, which is just the language we have been discussing. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative, the reason that you brought forward the delete all amendment was to address the concerns brought up in earlier committees and in between those committees to make it easier to pass and more durable once it is passed. Is that correct?
Representative Peel.
Mr. Chair, I'm representing, yes. Yes, in fact, it was. I heard the concerns about the building structure and other concerns, and that's why we addressed this.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, and Representative, and I appreciate appreciate you incorporating some of those. I kind of agree with some of the ones that were taken out, so I in some ways I would prefer it the way it was, but I understand that you have to make things work in the real world and also politically, and also hopefully something the governor can sign and can be easily enacted by people in the state, and so I appreciate those pieces. And I just, for folks who don't maybe understand the money part of the bill from the committee, this would be picked up in our spreadsheet in what's called an SGSR account, which is when licensed facilities have to get a license, they pay a fee every year, and that goes into an account, which is which would be the same for barber shops and surgical centers and lots of things that the health department has to inspect and provide licenses for. So that's where this money would go. And the health department would figure out what they need to do for the license, which is the same that they do for the barbershop in the basement of this building, for restaurants and lots of other things that the health department licenses. And they rely upon industry standards that they set out in their licensing codes. So this wouldn't be any different than any of the other the licenses that we're asking the Department of Health to do. And so I understand that there might be some ambiguity about whether to use which national standard that they might choose to adopt for their licensing, but that's really not
strange at all in terms of what they're doing for licensing, so I can appreciate that. Also have the exact dollar amount dialed in, which I think makes it a little bit easier. So I do appreciate the changes that have been made to this bill and trying to provide some common sense about moving forward with these facilities. So I appreciate what you've done to the bill and look forward to moving it to the floor. And I think that the members' concerns about the specifics of the licensure, the accrediting agency that might develop the standards around that are not at all out of step with other licensing facilities that we do statewide. So appreciate that, and the bill is, in fact, much slimmer than it was before, and so I don't see any, wouldn't see a need to bring it to my committee or any other committee from where it was to where it is. So I appreciate the changes, Representative.
Thank you.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Keel, thank you for bringing the bill forward and for the delete all. My question has to do with the accrediting standard booklet that you have there, and we don't know for sure which one would be used to do these. But my question is that, as you know, my wife is a nurse, and they've gone through Joint Commission and all kinds of accrediting things at the hospital that she works at. It's my understanding from discussions there that the accrediting standards do not just, I'll say, protect patients, but it also protects staff, nurses, doctors, and so forth. Are there things in here, is it your intention to also protect people that work in these places, the work conditions, the nurses, and so forth that would be there as well? Is that part of your intention?
Representative Keel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, it certainly would reflect on that, yes, because if they're accredited and someone accused them of something, they would have followed guidelines and been protected. Yes.
Thank you.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I have a couple of questions, and I had some of the same concerns that have been raised by other members of the committee earlier. Public safety, civil law, I think appropriately this bill should be considered by those committees. I do want to challenge a little bit with what the distinguished chair of the Health and Human Services Committee said about, he was talking about where the money would be deposited. For a bill like this, we would typically have a fiscal note, and the one we do have is dated last February, February 22nd, if I recall. Yeah, February 22nd. Doesn't really address the amendment at all. But there's talk in here about inspections and so on, and if the Barber Board were coming through, being that they were the ones that were referenced, and we were talking about inspections and perhaps the number of inspectors that would be needed, that would be information that would all be part of the fiscal note. And so I'm concerned not only about how the bill has gotten before us and what's happening here today with that delete all amendment, but also, again, we're going to be reporting out a bill, in this case with a major amendment, without an updated fiscal note. But I did have a question, being that the Commissioner of Health sent us a letter. Is there anybody here from the department that could respond to the amendment? Because their letter, as you pointed out, Mr. Chairman, was addressing the original bill and not the amended bill. And so I don't know with how rapidly things are going, if they've got anybody. Well, they do, because he's coming up to the table. If they have a reaction to the to the amendment, and in particular, I'd like to know what kind of a reaction that you have. Again, other members brought it up, but we're talking about a national organization doing the accreditation, and that's extremely vague as to what kind of national organization. I know a document was held up that said the National Abortions Accreditation Association or something akin to that. I don't really know what their history is, what that actually means, and so I think it would be helpful if the department could enlighten us on what their initial reaction is to the amendment, and then that language dealing with a national organization.
Sir, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means. Could you state your name for the record and respond to Representative Carlson?
Mr. Chair, Dan Pollack, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Health. I appreciate the opportunity to respond in the Ways and Means Committee. Representative Carlson, we didn't see this language until yesterday when it was posted publicly. That's why there's not a completed fiscal note. We have tried to analyze the bill language in the last 24 hours. I think, and I may be saying things that the author disagrees with, so I stand corrected if I'm saying this wrong. I think the bill, the delete all amendment that you see in front of you is based on the birth center statute, which is 144.615. It seems substantially similar to that existing law in which there is licensure by accreditation for birth centers. Their accreditation is called the Commission for the Accreditation of Birth Centers. It's a national organization specified in law. This delete all does not specify an accreditation organization, so the Commissioner of Health would have to either pick one or decide that there is none. It doesn't. The bill language doesn't really say one way or the other. And then, just by way of information, there is one substantial difference that I think once we get the fiscal note done, you'll see between this and the birth center law. The birth center law is odd because what we essentially say is, are you birth center accredited? Birth center says yes, and then we all just assume that they're doing everything okay. We don't actually do the activity in the delete all described in subdivision 5 inspections, 3.1 to 3.5. That's not something we do for birth centers, so that would be a departure from the birth center law that would be unique to abortion center law under this proposal. So that would be a cost that I think will be different. And we would be certainly concerned that $345 would not be sufficient to cover the activity. Unfortunately, because we haven't finished the fiscal note, I can't say for certain that it wouldn't. In terms of the appropriation from the SGSR, that appropriation amount, I think, reflects the old version. There is a current deficit in the SGSR for the Department of Health activities because we don't actually collect enough revenue currently through fees to cover our regulated activities.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, some of what was just said confirms much of my concern. You know, we are the Ways and Means Committee, a fiscal committee, and there are questions dealing with the fiscal side of it, in spite of what we heard from the Chair of Health and Human Services earlier. Now I've learned that there's a deficiency in the account. That would be one question. We don't know whether that fee would be adequate or not. And then the process that we're following where this amendment, the bill in its current form then, has not gone through the appropriate committees. I think the advice that you got from one of our members earlier that maybe would be wise for the Chair of Ways and Means to be more deliberative on this issue and perhaps give people more time when the testimony from the department pointed out that they had only seen the amendment in the last 24 hours. One who monitors the agenda, I would be in that same situation. I didn't see the amendment, or I didn't even actually hear about it until late yesterday afternoon. I'm not sure exactly what time it came out, but most of us are involved in other activities, so I became aware of it later in the afternoon. So I think it would be good advice to perhaps lay the bill over, or maybe even at some point give an opportunity. There's different ways it could happen for the appropriate committees to have input. They don't necessarily have to have the bill in their possession. They could at least have informational hearings in the two relevant committees that were mentioned, public safety and civil law. Although the best way would be for them to actually have possession of the bill. Well, those would be my thoughts, and I think I'm going to have to vote no on the bill here today if you bring it to a vote, simply because we don't know what the costs are. We don't know much about these national organizations, and it's just a major change at the last minute here in Ways and Means. in terms of what the history of the bill was until it came to the committee.
Well, and Representative Carlson, just let me respond. First of all, I mean, the amendment did meet the 24-hour rule, and we have certainly other major amendments that come up in this committee that meet the 24-hour rule, and so we act on them, and I don't know that we should be, you know, treating this one any different as long as it, you know, meets our other requirements. I mean, to the issue of the fiscal note, I certainly did think about that, and I guess, you know, we have a old fiscal note now that applies to the old bill and not to the bill as amended. I guess it is, you know, there's no general fund cost. It's a special revenue account. And so there's no issue under the rules that we need to somehow balance this within our budget resolution like we would have to do if it was a general fund item. And it appears from me and from my conversation with the author that the amount of work that is going to be required in the new language is less than it was in the original bill. So the cost would appear to be going down compared to the fiscal note. And I mean, the fiscal note at a cost of $34,000 isn't particularly large by most of the standards we use around here in any case. And so I guess, you know, given all those things, Representative Carlson, I did ponder not bringing it up today, but I guess I felt that under those circumstances we could bring it forward, and if there is something that is revealed by the fiscal note that means we need to further look at it, we could always call it back for further investigation. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I'm well aware that it's not the general fund, and I didn't raise that.
And I know you know that.
But we did basically plug in a number for the licensing fee that looked to me to be pretty soft, you know, and we did hear testimony where it may be an appropriate number, it may not be, and we did hear that that the account is basically under current fees with the other boards and so on, underfunded. I didn't know that until just a few moments ago. Which raises actually a broader question than the bill before us. But I know you met the 24-hour rule, but Mr. Chairman, I think we are all aware on both sides of the aisle that the abortion issue is a little bit different when you start bringing in amendments, even meeting the 24-hour rule, simply because of the history from 1973. We all know that it's a very high-profile issue that members of the public on both sides of the issue have a lot of interest in, and even meeting the 24-hour rule, I think, is just simply too short a period of time, and especially when there are two very relevant committees that probably should have had the bill before them. But I'll stop there, Mr. Chairman, and let others comment if they still would like.
Representative Liebling.
Well, Mr. Chair, to the point about it not requiring more work than the other bill, than the underlying bill. So in the underlying bill, on line 2.1, it says that the talking about inspections, it says no more than two times per year the Commissioner of Health shall perform routine and comprehensive inspections. In the amendment, on line 3.1, it says inspections prior to initial licensure and at least once every 2 years, the commissioner shall perform a routine and comprehensive inspection. So I would argue that in the amendment, in the new bill, there is the possibility of a substantial increased workload, because rather than putting a cap on how often the inspections can be done, it sets a minimum with no cap, which I think is problematic for a couple of reasons. One is fiscal, which you just were discussing with Representative Carlson, which is what made me want to bring this up. Of course, the other aspect of this is that a Department of Health, a commissioner of the Department of Health who was so inclined, could, of course, use this power to harass clinics for no reason, should he or she choose to do so, which is troubling to me. But in terms of what you were talking about, that, you know, we can get by without a fiscal note, this puts a floor now instead of a ceiling on the number of inspections. So I think that that suggests that there could indeed be more work for the commissioner, not less.
And I guess I would just say in response to Representative Liebling that, you know, typically I think they follow the guidelines that is in the legislation, and so we are going from a requirement of two inspections per year in the old language to a minimum of one every 2 years. So if they follow that language and don't act on having more than one every 2 years, you've decreased the number of inspections by 75%. Well, I'll give you the point that they could, in fact, do more than that if they chose to do so. But if they follow what sort of seem to be the guidelines in the statute, you're talking about 75% fewer inspections underneath the amended language than the language in the original bill.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yeah, I mean, that could be if they take this as a guideline. That's not how the bill is written, however. And so that's why I think it's important to have a fiscal note and have, you know, one of the things we get in a fiscal note is an assumption. And, of course, the assumptions can be right or wrong, but at least we know what they are. And we don't have that here at all. And it is significantly different than the underlying bill. I mean, that's really the point that I'm making. So it's really to the issue of we really ought to have a fiscal note when we pass legislation out of this committee. And this legislation is essentially a new bill that has been nowhere, has been heard in no committee except here in Ways and Means. So, you know, I don't think that's really the way we ought to do things around here, especially, as Representative Carlson points out, with legislation that is very high profile, that members have really strong feelings about on both sides, and that the public is very engaged on. And I just think that's not a move toward openness and transparency as we have been led to believe that the majority was interested in.
Other discussion to the bill? See no discussion. Representative Keel, do you have some closing comments?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. I'd like to point out, even though the Chair did, that the intent was to, you know, reduce, the inspections are reduced to initially and then once every 2 years. So there's no intention to be, unless there's a concern, I suppose, if they find something, they may go back and check again to make sure that the requirements, the accreditation is being followed. And I want to point out, too, that this is less stringent than the inspection of a body art facility. So we're not asking, as the Chair said, more. We're actually asking less. And I believe, too, that the funds will be, it will be less. Maybe the license fee will have to be more. That surprised me that they don't do any inspections in a birthing center. But with that, like I said earlier, my intent is to provide assurance to women who I think already think that these facilities are accredited or licensed to make sure that they are and that they provide the care and safety for their visitors that come to seek health care. And with that, thank you very much.
All right. With that, the Chair will renew his motion that House File 812, as amended, be referred to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No. Motion prevails. House File 812, as amended, is referred to the General Register. Okay, members, that concludes our work for the day. I'm expecting we're going to have a meeting on Monday to take up some other calendar bills. I don't know if it'll be at our regular 10-15 slot, though, because we may be preempted somewhere in there by session. I don't know what the session schedule is going to be next week, but watch your inbox and your schedule for a meeting probably Monday next week to take up some more calendar bills. And Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chair, do you have any idea what those bills will be whenever we meet?
You know, I don't know that I do. I know that we still have the lands bill in our possession, and we've got to act on that one of these days. You know, there's a number of other bills we've got, you know, that are in our possession that we need to do, and I can't tell you off. We got LCCMR, I guess, too. I guess I can't say that that'll be one of them, but we do have more bills to do this year, so we'll get something on the calendar as soon as we can.
Mr. Chairman, LCCMR bill sometimes takes a little longer than we might anticipate, so...
All right, well,
sometimes it just goes flying right through, and other times there's a fair amount of discussion, and I can't make any prediction from my perspective yet.
Yeah, and that's why I don't really know what time to say for Monday, because I guess if session was at 11 o'clock, I don't think we want to have a Ways and Means meeting at 10 or 15. We'll have to see. More likely, it'll be sometime after session, but we'll keep you posted. Okay, thank you. With that, meeting's adjourned.